What's it all for?
Various artists.
Matthew Galloway is a Punaki-based artist known for his research-led practice in which he navigates his making through this design sensibility, examining the infrastructures within our everyday lives, producing socially engaged installations that include sculpture, prints, and video work. His current exhibition, Watch History at SUMA, continues Galloway's approach to the world through this design landscape, producing an installation of over 70 engraved iPhone 16s on luxury modular couches, developed during his time at the McCann House Residency earlier this year. Over 70 iPhones engraved in fragments of text, taken from lines and closed captions from various films and TV shows that the artist watched, showcasing an unusually fixed screen with a watch history that removes itself from all context, media and human, creating a dynamic and at times absurd array of text in which the viewer encounters at their own pace and path of navigation. I caught up with Matthew about the show and overall practice.
Kia ora, my name's Matthew Galloway. My work is grounded, I guess, in a design sensibility. I started studying design at Ilam School of Fine Arts and have slowly gravitated into art spaces. And I guess for the last maybe decade or so, have primarily been making work in galleries alongside publications as well. And that design sensibility is important because I've come to really see the world as a designed landscape, like where everything that we interact with from the moment we wake up in the morning and look at our phones to how we get to work, the devices we use, the seats we sit on, like literally everything, are moments of design. And if you start to think of the world in that way, you start to be like, right, what dominant forms of design or ways of thinking have shaped the world? And what does it mean to then critique them in some way? So I have a show that a big long project that looked at the Clyde Dam in central Otago, for instance, and how a hydro dam informs a lot of the ways we live. So it enables us to have electricity, it enables us to have internet, all of these things. But it also comes from this moment in the 1970s where our politicians were trying to figure out how to modernize the country and be less reliant on crazy swings and oil prices overseas. And so the minute you start looking at something like a dam, which is this stack of design, you start to be like, okay, this is the way the world is, and why is it like this, and how is the dam a window into critiquing that or thinking about it? Yeah, so I think in a nutshell, that's that idea of the design landscape is kind of what drives me a lot of the time.
Yeah, this like inherent architecture or something that's in our everyday lives that we participate in, but maybe never like rethink it or really engage with it in a certain way.
Yeah, a lot of these things just happen, and infrastructures are interesting because the whole idea of it is that we don't notice an infrastructure until it stops working.
And I'd like to start this conversation around your new work at SUMA, Watch Histories, by speaking to its kind of beginnings, which unfolded during your time at the McCann Residency. What kind of questions, materials, or media did this project arise from?
This project is an interesting one for me. It's fun and it's loose, and I think in a way it's more immediate than some of my other projects. It started from this moment when I was watching something on my phone, like a TV series on Netflix. And I had the subtitles on, and I saw the subtitle come up, and it just, I liked it. I think it said something like, the past is never finished. And so I just screen grabbed it, kind of just second nature. But when I screen grabbed it, I found out that Netflix has this feature where it blocks you from actually screen grabbing the image, any of their content. And so it was a black image, but the subtitle was still there. So it was suddenly like this weird little decontextualized message, the past is never finished, in white at the bottom of the screen. And that just sat with me for a while. That was maybe, I don't know, a year or two ago. And a lot of my projects are like this. They dwell in the back of my mind and slowly find their way to the surface. If they kind of stay there long enough, I'm like, okay, this idea's not going away. But the idea that was, how can I present that subtitle as a work? And how can I do it in a way where it's not just a phone displaying it? Because I think there's nothing super interesting about that. And also, I hate the idea that you have to have a phone plugged into work, and in the gallery setting, having power cords and everything. And I realized that I could engrave the subtitle into the phone. And there was a lot of trial and error. And this was happening while I was at the Macan. I started to play with the form and think, okay, can I print onto this glass? Can I, create a film over the top and paint on the film, like a clear film and stick it to the phone? And eventually I realized, that I could work with a trophy engraving center to laser engrave into the actual glass of the phone. And after that, I just started collecting heaps of these subtitles. And the final show is over 70 phones, each engraved with a different subtitle. And the phones themselves are not real iPhones. They're fake dummy iPhones that are basically shells. And so I think in that way, there's a lot of ways to read the work, but you could comment on the idea that these subtitles are taken out of context, but they represent my watch history, but the general idea of a watch history that we all use these phones to ingest entertainment, but we also move on so quickly that we kind of forget.
Yeah.
We forget what we've watched.
Yeah.
We're on to the next thing, and these subtitles remain as like a little ghost of what we've watched. And the shell of the phone is maybe a comment on the emptiness of that as well. But I do enjoy the idea that there's lots of different ways people have been talking about and reading the work.
What I think is quite interesting is that, like, Netflix, I didn't only found this out today about that screenshotting and that blank screen. It automatically removes the text from its context.
Yeah.
It automatically makes that shift. And I think it's quite interesting you're building upon that. And also by engraving it, you're also, like, screens are these things that are, the image is always in flux. It's constantly moving. It's constantly shifting. But by engraving this text, you're kind of fixing it in that space to that phone. But I also wanted to speak a bit about these specific fragments of text themselves. Did you collect them over time? Because that first one just kind of happened. But then once you got that idea, were you more consciously screenshotting those texts?
Yeah, that was really interesting. And I went back and forth about how to do that because I didn't necessarily want every single one of them to have some grand meaning behind it. Like that first one, in a way, did because it started the whole process. And also the idea that, it was kind of a more philosophical one, the past is never finished. But then when I started to collect them, I realized that there was a lot of fun in the idea that some of them could seem meaningful and some could be really silly.
Mm.
And also closed captions became really interesting to me. So the idea of birds chirping, or there's one that says rain pattering, children playing, which I really love. And so it becomes about, I became really aware of how entertainment film scripts are so economical with how they talk and do things. Like you get a lot out of a very small amount of text. And even without any context, something like, there's one that says like, officer, don't shoot. And it's, you get kind of like the genre, you kind of start to imagine what film that might have come from. And for a while, I also think having over 70 of them dilutes the importance of any which one being meaningful because they can all bounce off each other and do their own thing. But then, they're displayed as this massive group and it's overwhelming. But then also, if someone wants to buy one, I guess they can put it on their wall or display it in some way and it can be thought about a lot, just this one quote. So it operates in those two different ways.
Yeah, and by further removing them from their context, you kind of create this new script and this new dialogue out of these fragments. Yeah, everyone that kind of walks through will have like a different, not story, but a different form of dialogue or a different form of words that they're interacting with as they pass through, kind of creating their own orientation.
Yeah, and I have favorites, but I'm curious to find out which ones speak to other people. I like that idea that ones that I might not necessarily fully, that I might not be my favorites might be someone else's favorite.
And this, you kind of talked about it already, but this form of engraving, did you really like this aspect that it was a permanent fixture onto the screen itself?
Yeah, 100%. I thought that it made it quite valuable in a way. Like engraving feels to me like a I don't know. Yeah, because it's so permanent, yeah, it feels valuable in some way. Like you engrave things that are meaningful, whether it be like a gravestone or a memorial or the side of a building or a trophy. These things all, you know, feel like engraving is the sense of permanence and wanting to keep it that way. And again, because as you said earlier really nicely, phones are usually so transient in the way that images come and go so quickly. The fact that you're doing that, it's like juxtaposing the whole purpose of what a phone's meant to do.
No, and it's, as you said, you instantly get reminded of those I don't know, luxury watches. Or also maybe, like, yes, that element of luxury, but also that, you know, it's like you'd engrave something to give to a loved one or that really like personal item. Yeah. So also it's, fixing this text on, but it is also kind of making it really personal in that sense. Like it's bringing that into that space as this object that's passed along rather than just this factory kind of object.
Yeah, 100%. And I think even the idea that, I don't know, just to print it on, doesn't have the same value and also feels like it's much easier to replicate or create. You could print like 5 versions of it super quickly, whereas the engraving's a little bit more, as you say, personal.
And these phones are then placed on these luxury couches, creating this really interesting dialogue between luxury and the everyday. Could you speak a bit to the decision behind the incorporation of these specific sofas that are used in the show?
Yeah, sure. They're a system of modular couches from the 70s called the Camaleonda range, Italian luxury sofas that have been supplied to us by Matisse. So it's a collaboration with Matisse, who's a furniture store. And the discussion around the type of couch was actually a very long one. And it went through different, so there's a number of ways of thinking about it. Firstly, the idea of putting them on couches or sofas as a kind of plinth of one kind or another came out of this idea that, you know, so much of the time that I'm taking these screenshots, I'm probably sitting on or lying on a couch, you know, kind of rotting away a little bit as I kind of watch content on my phone. And so and the idea that the phone so often just gets tossed onto a couch, or you kind of go, where's my phone? And you look over and it's on the couch. So there was that idea that felt quite natural. And from there, it was like, okay, what kind of couch feels right? And the idea of a modular system is interesting because, you know, phones have this mass production kind of like little lozenge shape, which feels similar to the couches and to the idea of modularity. So there were those ideas. And then there was this thing of like, these couches are super expensive and they're kind of out of reach. And yet the phone in its own way has this modern day everyday luxury to it, where we all have become to a certain point, I guess, so reliant on them, and they are able to give us so much. And they're reasonably expensive, but we've all just decided that they're necessary. They've become like a necessary luxury. And we all pay the price tag, you know? but there is a juxtaposition of like a high and low brow luxury, which, it's just an interesting interplay. But, you know, like you could also do the idea of the dummy phones on dummy couches or fake couches. And that was something that I looked into and I found the exact same couches that we use, which are the real ones, were being replicated and sold out of a warehouse in Lower Hutt by a group of people who had redesigned it and had them manufactured in China. I don't know. I thought about that and I enjoyed in the end the negotiation with Matisse and the idea that they were willing to come on board and work with us, and that there's something about the like inaccessibility of these couches to most people that I think makes them interesting as objects for these phones to sit on.
Yeah, and I also, you did briefly talk about it, but that the install of the phones being very, very scattered and being very kind of, yeah, kind of bring it back, that idea of a person on the couch and it slips between the sofa or slips on the floor, it kind of has this illusion of a human presence that's been there. Did you kind of want this in the install, that relation to that human presence between them? But then it is also so weird and absurd having so many that it creates a really interesting thing of these phones in this kind of natural habitat of sorts, but with the so many it brings it into that complete like absurd kind of realm.
I enjoy the absurdity of it and the playfulness of it, of having so many phones, because I think hopefully for the viewer, they walk in and are just like, what am I looking at? Like, how are there so many phones here and what is happening? But beyond that, you know, I've imagined this idea of, because in a way you could view it as like an airport waiting room, departure lounge type setup, where you've got these different couches and you go to those kinds of spaces and everyone is looking at their phone and then they're leaving and then someone else comes and replaces them. Mm. And almost like, imagine if everyone left their phones behind, you know, there's that element, or every time you screenshotted, the phone created a copy and just fell onto the couch. You know, there's things like that I like thinking about. So I think that's where the idea of the many, many phones came from. It was about, one, capturing my watch history. And so automatically over time, there were a lot of phones. And then also just the fun and the playfulness, and then some of these ways in which you can imagine the human within that space. The couch is made for us, right? And the phone is made for us. And so these two things are working on that scale.
And I want to talk a little bit more about the relationship and the conversations that is created by having these different kind of these ready-mades and these objects in that one space, in that space together, speaking to different economies. What kind of conversations do you want it to, I don't know, pull up?
I love the fact that all of them, you know, both the phone and the couch system have so much symbolic meaning on their own, right? Like, yeah, again, if we think about this idea of the design landscape, if you look at like a logo or a phone, anything that's been designed, it has so much meaning packed into it already. And everyone has a relationship to these things. The phone is so loaded with all of our own understandings of it, our histories with it. And so if you think about it as a ready-made, it comes pre-packaged with heaps of meaning. But, you know, I think you can be lazy with that and it's not interesting because of the fact that it already has all that meaning pre-packaged. And so my job is to be like, oh, there's something interesting here that flips things on its head in some way or another. This phone is a shell. It's engraved. It's been made permanent in a very strange way. Also, I like the idea that potentially people might even initially think that it's a working phone displaying a subtitle, and then you get closer and realize, no, wait a minute, this is like engraved into the phone. So there's all these ways in which I'm playing with a ready-made item to subvert it in some way or to make it do something it's not meant to do. But I like that it comes with all that loaded meaning in the first place. And if you can understand that and then play with it, you can do something hopefully interesting.
Do you have any questions or thoughts that you wish for viewers to kind of bump up against when they enter that space of that work and kind of go through it and engage with it?
I think there's something about the lament that I like, that I maybe hope people see, you know, and that's my more serious artist side. And I also just, I hope and enjoy the idea of people just picking subtitles that they like and being like, oh, I love this one. Oh, that's really funny. The playfulness of that and the unexpectedness of the display, of just walking in and being like, why am I looking at what I'm looking at and how does this work? And, you know, often I just love that art can do that, that it it does something that nothing else can do, and that means it does weird things or displays things in strange ways. And I like the agency of that. I like just the idea that this work was a thought in my mind and now it exists in the world is quite gratifying and nice. And yeah, I've come to realize that I'm always surprised by what people find in the work I make, whether it is the more research-heavy work that comes with a lot of content to delve into, or something like this that is more playful, potentially on the surface, but also has layers of meaning. I'm always surprised by things that the audience sees that I haven't thought about. And again, I think that's why I like art and why it's powerful, because it can have lives way beyond whatever you first intended it to have.
Yeah, there's always that layer from when you're making it, you're so personal with it, and it's kind of, I think there's always maybe a bit of the work that you can never quite see yourself as the artist, and it's only once it enters that gallery space and it has that opportunity for that engagement and for viewers to kind of bring their own thoughts and baggage and life into the equation that the work, I don't know, really has the chance to live out its of life in some capacity.
Yeah, absolutely.
That was Matthew Galloway speaking to me about his current show, Watch History, which is on at SUMA until the 15th of November.